Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Raptors Over Everything, a podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Lowe, live in location in Orlando. It's very muggy. Joining me on the line from Toronto, Vivek Jacob.
Hey, man. It's pouring rain here, so don't complain.
Yeah, listen, it's about to be pouring rain here in Orlando, too. And, to be honest, the weather has been nice, but also it's been super muggy. But we're not here to talk about the weather. We're going to talk about the Raptors, who it feels like everyone sort of chilled out. You know, the 2 days in between game two and three are very different from the 2 days between games one and two. Obviously, that's because the Raptors had a big result. Look, coming into this game, though, I do feel like the Raptors ahead of game three, they have a sense of urgency. But I feel like for the fan base itself, it feels like everyone's a little bit comfortable. What's your thoughts on just where the fans are?
I do think the fans are feeling a lot more confident now. They've seen the team that they were hoping to see in game one. So now that, you look at the way Kawhi performed, you look at Marc Gasol and now Kyle Lowry getting on board. If that's the team that shows up in Orlando, then, you know, there's every chance that they come back to Toronto with a chance to close out the series. So I think that's where the general mood is. I'm a bit more, I wouldn't say apprehensive, but just a bit more curious to see which team shows up. We've seen those games this season where they went to San Antonio, went to Houston, and didn't really show up to start the game, and it cost them. So again, I'm interested to see how they respond to a playoff atmosphere in Orlando. Obviously, they're all geared up. They haven't been in the postseason in 7 years. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Raptors respond to that atmosphere.
Yeah, for sure. And look, listen, it depends on honestly who you ask in terms of whether or not they're actual Orlando Magic fans. But apparently the arena is going to be, obviously packed and sold out, so things like this. But like, the ticket prices are actually not cheap at all, which is a little bit surprising, I thought. And I don't know. I guess people are excited for basketball in Orlando. I guess there's good reason to be. I mean, seriously, you don't make the playoffs for 7 years. Like, you're going to be hyped. But so was that shoot around. The atmosphere there seemed like, the Raptors really, at least speaking to reporters and stuff, they seemed to understand that there is a bit of urgency. Kyle Lowry, for example, talked extensively about how hard, the players have to be playing. Like, it's honestly, he was talking about how, you think you're playing hard, but then you get to the playoffs and that's not even enough, and you gotta push yourself to the next level and things like this. So I mean, at least they are aware of it, but we'll see how the Magic respond. One thing that I'm a little bit curious about is whether or not the Magic will actually get something out of Nick Vucevic so far in the series. I mean, he's been pretty bad. I just wrote a piece about how Marc Gasol's defense has been pivotal in the series, but ultimately I do think that Vucevic will eventually bounce back and have at least an average game, because so far on the series, he's at 17 points, shooting 6 of 21 from the field with 5 turnovers against 6 assists. So not good numbers at all. We're talking about a guy who's averaged 21 points a game coming in. First off, what have you seen from Marc Gasol's defense that has been able to limit Vucevic's production? And sort of, after that, we can talk about how the Magic might look to counter.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is the fact that every time Vucevic has gotten the ball down low, he can't really get to where he wants to go against Gasol. Gasol is able to, use his strength to keep him away from, the ideal block spot. Vucevic is sort of starting further away from the basket than maybe he's accustomed to. And then on top of that, he hasn't been able to hit his jumper with any consistency. So there hasn't really been an out for him or anything to force Gasol to change things up. And, I think now coming to Orlando, maybe he'll feel a bit more comfortable shooting at shooting on his home rim. And, you know, I think the key for him is the jump shot against Gasol, because that's the only way you can sort of drag him out, maybe create some room for you to maybe work in the post and, you know, just give Gasol something to think about. Because without the jumper, if it's all going to have to come from the inside, I think we might actually see this trend continue. I don't think Vucevic has a way past Gasol on the interior.
Yeah, I think one thing that hurts the Magic as well in this series is that I don't think they have, especially in the starting lineup, like a particularly good screener where you can sort of run some sort of cross-screen action where you can maybe get Gasol off of Vucevic and Vucevic onto a smaller guy. And I think in that scenario, Vucevic can cook. But I'm looking at the roster and, like, it's just hard to sort of envision where that would come from, you know? And
right.
And so if it's not coming out from the post, it's probably out of something like pick and pop, which, you know, as you mentioned, he can shoot a little bit better percentages from three or from mid range. But ultimately, as we talked about in the preview podcast, like, he's not necessarily a great outside shooter. And if the Raptors, you know, see Vucevic taking like five straight jumpers, I don't think they'll panic too much. I think that's sort of what they'll live with defensively. And so, you know, I think, again, it really just comes down to what the Raptors will give up in the pick and roll, right? Like, we saw in game one, obviously, DJ Augustine put a hurting on the Raptors through the pick and roll. And I feel like if DJ gets going a little bit more, that's probably going to open up a bit of space for Vucevic, like you said. But ultimately, it could just be a bad matchup. I mean, like, this is kind of a reminder that, look, Marcus Saul has been, you know, an all defensive type player. He's won defensive player of the year back in 2012. And, you know, even though he doesn't necessarily have the foot speed, his mind is very sharp and he's still extremely strong. And I think Vucevic is kind of just running into a wall. And it might just be a bad matchup. It's just for Vucevic, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, to your point about Gasol, I would also add that, you know, we always talk about chemistry on the offensive end and understanding what people are going to do. I think it really helps that, you know, whether he's in a pick and roll action that involves Kyle Lowry defensively or Danny Green, both of them are high IQ guys. He can sort of anticipate what's coming. And I think that, you know, that's part of why everyone was so shocked to see what happened on that final play in game one, where, you know, you have Gasol and Kawhi Leonard, two former defensive players of the year, miscommunicating. But I think since then, you know, we've seen the intensity pick up. We've seen the focus and attention to detail that, you know, this contending squad should bring on a nightly basis in the playoffs. And so I think now, you know, with Lowry and Danny Green sort of looking to prove a point to Augustine and Fournier, I think that takes away a lot of what Vucevic is trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. And look, honestly, like, Vucevic and Steve Clifford have talked about this sort of extensively now. Like, part of it is also on Vucevic is just work harder, right? Like, one of the benefits he has is that he's, like, almost 10 years younger than Gasol. So, you know, just running faster down the floor, you know, getting early post-ups, sealing a guy. You know, again, maybe it's going to be difficult, you know, in half court. But if you run down the floor early and you can get, like, a Pascal Siakam on you, or you can get Danny Green on you or whatever, then that will force the Raptors into trapping and doubling, because, again, you know, it's pretty much only Gasol who can handle him down low. So, you know, I can see that. I can see maybe, like, Steve Clifford staggering the minutes a little bit so Vucevic goes against Ibaka. But ultimately, I think if the Magic are going to take more games out of the series, it's probably going to have to come through more of the perimeter scorers. And we've seen little flashes of it, obviously, TJ in game one. I thought game two, Aaron Gordon was pretty good from the perimeter. It's kind of the things where the Raptors kind of live with his scoring a little bit just because they have bigger priorities elsewhere. But, you know, if the Magic can get hot from three like they did in game one, I think that's probably their best bet. So, I mean, looking at their perimeter guys, do you feel like there's things that they could do differently to free up Augustine or Ross to some extent, or even Fournier?
I would honestly think about starting Terrence Ross. I think with the way the Raptors are able to, you know, we saw in game one how much they look to trap him. If you can start Terrence Ross, give him those starters to play off of, I think it can improve the spacing. We've seen Fournier sort of be a straight line drive guy. They've taken away that two-man game between Fournier and Vucevic on the left side. So I think Terrence Ross adds a different element, a bit more of a shooting threat. And so I think, if you can get him involved in those actions in the starting lineup, I think Fournier is, you know, the type of experienced guy that, you know, maybe he can sort of help shepherd those bench units as well. And Ross, I mean, he's young enough to, you know, maybe take on a bigger load of minutes and, you know, be back in with that bench unit as well. So I think that's the one change I would look at if I was Steve Clifford. You know, I think he might not want to just panic at a stage when the series is still tied at one, but I do think that in order to get their offense going, you know, I think there was maybe a bit of fool's gold for the Orlando Magic from the game one, because you look at some of the mistakes the Raptors made with those entry feeds, that's not something you can really expect to continue. And so where is their offense going to come from if they're consistently in the half court, if they're not able to create transition opportunities, which is something that they never really did over the course of the season? So I think that's where you need someone that can sort of muck things up, like with a Terrence Ross who can just, you know, throw up shots from anywhere.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, if you do put Terrence in the starting lineup, though, I'm assuming you're taking Jonathan Isaac out.
I think you look at either Jonathan Isaac or you look at Evan Fournier. I just don't. Okay. I think the way the Raptors are prepared for that two man game, I think it's really taken a big chunk of the half court offense out of the Orlando Magic. So I think that's something that I would look at. And, you know, again, maybe that doesn't really change your spacing too much, but I think the way Ross can shoot at a high volume, you know, up top over anybody, I think that's a better opportunity for the Magic. I don't think Fournier has had the impact that they would have liked, especially in getting Vucevic involved. So, you know, as much as they're saying, you know, it's between Clifford and Vucevic to get the best out of him, I think that's another avenue that they can look at.
Yeah, for sure. Fournier's numbers through two games, he's at 11 of 30 shooting from the field, 4 of 12 from 3, 7 of 18 from 2. Like, you know, he hasn't gone to the free throw line even once. I mean, outside of a couple of those, like, steal and transition finishes, like, mm-hmm. Fournier really hasn't gone off. And I agree. Like, Ross is a bigger offensive threat. I think, you know, I could see Isaac maybe getting a little less time, too, especially if the Magic offense continues to be super gummy, because he's definitely the worst offensive player in that starting lineup. Now, granted, like, I know the Magic are looking at it in terms of defensively. You know, Steve Clifford is defense-first kind of coach, and Isaac has, at least on paper, been a really good defender against Pascal. Now, obviously, that hasn't really transpired. Pascal has, you know, he's averaging like 20-plus points in the series so far, so it's not like Isaac's doing that much defensively, even though I think he's doing well. It's just, you know, Pascal is so talented as a scorer. But that's one of the things where you look at Isaac, right? I mean, he hit a couple of threes, but I believe the stat is he is 1 for 10 on threes on the playoffs, and most of them are uncontested, right? And so I just don't think he's good enough of a shooter, and the Raptors clearly aren't, you know, respecting him too much. I mean, the way the Raptors, you know, defended Vucevic, part of it, it's not just Gasol, it was also they brought double teams, and usually when they brought double teams, they were helping off of guys like Isaac, because they know he can't shoot. And, you know, so if Isaac continues to struggle, and he's a young player, he's only 21, this is his first playoff run, if he continues to struggle from the three and he's not defending Pascal well, like, I could see them maybe going super small with Ross at, you know, I guess Ross wouldn't even be that, it wouldn't be that small, because they would shift Gordon to four and they would put Ross at three, although that means Ross is guarding Kawhi. See, this is the issue. The Raptors have a lot of problems.
They present
a lot of problems.
And again, I really think this is why there was so much frustration after game one, right? The Raptors are clearly the better team. All due respect to the Magic, you know, finishing with the number one defensive rating and finishing 22-9 on this season. You know, the Raptors just pose so many problems that when they come out with, you know, full intensity, committed to, you know, executing their game plan, I don't think this is a close series. This should have been a sweep. I think as long as the intensity is there, the Raptors are a far better team than the Magic, especially, you know, in playoff battles where, again, Vucevic is your only all-star, and going up against Marc Gasol, he's no match. So, again, they can't get any offense out of the half court. This series, you know, it sort of looks like, remember when Milwaukee sort of went small, the Raptors went small against Milwaukee, and you just figured, okay, Milwaukee really has nothing else to go to. The Raptors in this series now, it just looks like, okay, they've ramped up the intensity, and as long as that stays where it is, Orlando really has nothing to go to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this is probably why you know, aside from the fact that they're coming, you know, they're playing in a hostile arena, things like this, like, I think that's probably why one of the big focuses of Shootaround, again, like I mentioned earlier, was just, like, they got to be intense, they got to play hard, and they got to focus. And to be honest, that has been an issue for the Raptors, right? Like, they don't, like, the way they played game two was very different than the way they played game one. And it wasn't even necessarily the physicality. Like, it was just sort of how sharp and how crisp execution was. And, you know, you could look at it as three-pointers. Like, obviously, a lot of NBA games nowadays are decided on, it's a make-or-miss league, Doug, you know, that kind of stuff. Yep. But it's also whether or not you could take care of the ball, right? Because the Raptors, you know, in game one, they gave up a lot of transition points to the Magic, and that hurt them. And in game two, the Magic couldn't execute well. They had a bunch of turnovers, which is very uncharacteristic for that team. I think they will sharpen that up. They had 17 turnovers, and the Raptors just basically ran it down every single time for a layup. And so, you know, it really does come down to execution and sort of, you know, which team feels pressure and which team you can just sort of keep their cool. Playoff Kawhi.
One thing I want to touch on before we get to that is, so in the story that I wrote previewing the game, if, you know, the Magic do come out with a ton of intensity and they are, you know, able to, you know, punch the Raptors in the mouth early and it comes down to a close game late, what I am interested to see is, you know, I was looking at the crunch time numbers of the Raptors home and away, and at home, you know, in the final 4 minutes of games within 3 points, the Raptors had 12 steals to 11 turnovers, but away from home, it goes to 5 steals to 16 turnovers. And they shoot extremely inefficiently, under 40%. You know, they're about 25% from three. The pace of the game really slows down for them on the road as well. So that's something where, you know, I think there's an opportunity to maybe learn something about the Raptors if it does come down to a close game. And hopefully you see that at least, you know, once, whether it be game three or game four, where the Raptors are tested in that way and how they execute. And again, we've seen all season that the transition part of the game for the Raptors is a huge aspect of their success. And so when teams are able to take that away, I think it at least helps keep things competitive.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about playoff Kawhi.
Yep. That dude is...
I just want more, man. I just want more.
It's incredible, man, the things he's able to do. Just at will, so easily. And again, you know, I was watching a Jalen Rose video, and he was just talking about how there's really just no wasted movements.
Yep.
In anything and everything he does, you know, even someone like a Steph Curry likes to have a bit of fun, you know, cross over a few extra times before pulling up. Kawhi, there is absolutely no waste in movement. Everything is about efficiency. And yeah, that was a show in game two. And you can see when he's at that gear, unless you have another superstar going up against him, there's really nothing you can do.
Yeah, for sure. And the Magic, I mean, here's the thing. I feel bad almost for Aaron Gordon because he is a really good defender, and I've been really impressed with him throughout the series with just what he's able to do. Like, his three-point shooting's been there. He's been creating off the dribble a little bit. His three-point he's a good player, and he's living up to the billing of a former, fourth pick or something?
Right.
Yeah, fourth pick in 2014. But, I mean, yeah, he's playing great defense against Kawhi. It's just kind of like, Kawhi's just getting to his spots, and it's just once he gets to those certain spots on the floor, he's almost always guaranteed to score. And also, B, like, you know, circling back to Vucevic, like, defensively, he's been super disappointing. And, you know, the Raptors have sort of made a point of this. You know, one thing I noticed going over the tape of game two was just how high the Raptors were putting Marc Gasol in terms of setting screens. And they would make a concerted effort of this where they would get to the middle of the floor, make sure the spacing was good, have Gasol set a screen almost at half court, basically, and have Kawhi just rush downhill and quickly enough so that, you know, there's no chance for Gordon to fight over the screen or even go under the screen, really, because Gasol is really just that wide. And so he's always chasing from behind, and so, you know, Vucevic has to step up in that situation. And, like, Gasol, like, he's a good three-point shooter, right? So you can't leave him completely open. But also at the same time, like, Vucevic just can't do anything with Kawhi. There's that one clip where, you know, coming off this exact play I'm describing, high pick and roll near half court, Kawhi rushes down, you know, and then he crosses over to his left. He usually likes to go to his right, but he crosses over to his left, sheds Vucevic, and he just dunks the ball. And then he goes to the bench, he sits down, and you can see him literally mouthing the words, "It's too easy." And against Vucevic, it is a little bit too easy. And I feel like, you know, this is something you mentioned, like, you know, just even before the series, if you can turn the opposing team's best player into a liability, then that has to be, you know, it has to rock the confidence of the other team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we've seen it in Toronto, right? Like the playoff games where Kyle Lowry has struggled shooting the ball, or DeMar DeRozan hasn't even been, you know, has basically become unplayable. You know, that's when the Raptors really look like they have nothing to go to, because you look at the role players, they don't really know, they haven't had the opportunity to sort of be in situations where they're expected to do much. I think that's part of why you look at teams, a team like a San Antonio, and why they're still able to be so effective in the playoffs, is because during the regular season, Pop actually does a great job of putting them in positions and saying, hey, you know, in the playoffs there are going to be nights like this where we need you. And so again, you look at that Orlando roster, you know, once you take away Vucevic, you're asking Fournier to do more, you're asking DJ Augustine to do more. And sure, you know, you might catch lightning in a bottle like they did with Augustine in game one. Fournier hasn't been able to find a groove, and you know, Aaron Gordon I think is doing as much as he can, considering the fact that you know, he's got to really bring it on both ends. So again, it's just the talent discrepancy between the two teams is so evident, and again, as long as the intensity is there, it will be too easy for the Raptors.
Yeah, for sure. Which, quick aside, now that you mentioned the Spurs, I'm really happy for DeMar, man. He's had a couple of really good games here.
Yeah, I mean, that third quarter was incredible.
Yeah,
when he dropped 19.
Yeah. And the thing, it's always funny with DeMar, because you look at the plus minus and that stuff afterwards. Like, you got guys like Derek White, who, what a player he is. But he's plus 30 with 36 points. LaMarcus Aldridge plus 27 with 18 points, and then DeMar, who had a great game, 25 points on 9 of 18 shooting, plus 6. It's just it's always so weird with his plus minus. But no, I'm really happy to see DeMar thriving, man. Because again, like, he has a playoff reputation, and I feel like, you know, this year in the playoffs, from the little bits of Spurs that I've watched, like, he's not stressing, he's not pressing, he's playing his game. I think it helps to play against the Nuggets. They don't really have a guy on the perimeter who you're like, okay, you know, that's a lockdown wing who can use its length to bother DeMar and stuff. But DeMar's played great. The Spurs are the seventh seed. They're up 2-1 in the series. They really should be up 3-0.
Yep, they should be.
And yeah, so, you know, happy for DeMar to conquer some playoff demons for sure.
And I mean, just looking ahead for them, if they get what looks like right now the Blazers in the second round, you're potentially looking at them going to the Western Conference Finals,
which will be nuts. And this is why early in the season I wrote about how this is the greatest coaching job of Greg Popovich's career, because you're looking at the roster he's working with. Like, yeah, you got like DeMar and LaMarcus, but we all know those are like B-minus type of like stars in terms of like elite players, right? And then the rest of that team is just like random cobbled together pieces that, like, you know, Pop turned into a great bench. You know, Derek White seems to be the next great Spurs sort of find in the development system. There's a great piece out on ESPN by Baxter Holmes about that. Just the West is looking funny, because look, man, if the Warriors somehow screw this all up and they don't come out of the West, then, like, I don't know. If it's not the Warriors out West, the champion's coming out of the East.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a pretty fair statement. But yeah, again, I think we saw the Warriors level last night, and what they can do when they're going at full throttle. So it's going to take something pretty special to beat them.
Do you think there will be as many pieces about how the Clippers showed exactly why they're such an attractive destination with that 31-point comeback? You think there's any follow-up pieces about the Clippers showing exactly why they're not a destination with that loss? No? Okay, well, the one side of coverage of the Clippers this year has been real interesting, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right, quick prediction for Game 3?
I will say the Raptors win a close game. I think they actually do get punched in the mouth early, but then they work their way back, and then talent just wins out.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. I think they get punched in the mouth in the sense that the Magic bench probably outscores the Raptors bench by like 15 points tonight, something like that. it's one of those games, and we've seen many editions of this game this season with the Raptors where the starters are really good but the bench is trash, and right. And yeah, so.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
2-1 we'll in see. The series. That'd be great if the Raptors lose. I can't wait to be stressed out, but hopefully they don't do that to us. So for Vivek and myself, thanks for listening to Raptors of Everything. We'll be back after the game to deliver post-game analysis.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.